Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Can you hear us?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great, 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 great. Okay, let me get my little act together here. All right, I guess I'm not smart enough to use the computer. Oh, there we go. Yay. Okay. Welcome to the Leo and Aquarius, pairs of opposite. We're going to start today with Leo. Before we start, though, if you haven't pulled it out already in the handouts, there is the a copy of the slides if you want to print it out and take notes. There's also the one for next time. We actually only have two more webinars. Next time will be the Virgo Pisces, and then we'll have one final to wrap it up. Okay. Let me see. Kirsten, you have a question. You're self-muted. Kirsten, your hand is up. You're self-muted. Did you have a question? Well, I don't hear her, so I'm going to mute her again and then put her hand down. If you have a question and you want to type it, Kirsten, there we go. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Okay. So, the House of Leo. Okay, wait a minute. I do have. You're welcome for the handouts. Okay, so Leo, very sunny, fixed fire. It rules the fifth house. The rays that it has, that it transmits, are rays 5 and ray 1. Birth dates end of July to the end of August, roughly. A lot of number fives there, right? It's the fifth sign of the zodiac, and it's associated with the fullness of summer. It's exuberant, extroverted, generous, with a natural flair for the dramatic. The undeveloped Leo can be self-centered, bossy, intolerant, prideful, and arrogant. Okay, I can probably own up to all of those, but maybe some are a little bit better than the other ones are there.
Is that because you have Leo in your chart?
Oh, no, I don't. Yes, it is my sun sign. It is my personality. So that's what I can own up to those. One of those, I don't know, I have a brother with Leo, and I like to think of him as my in-your-face Leo brother. I also like to think I'm not that bad, but it could just be wishful thinking. Okay, so the lion rules the heart, the spine, and the spleen. It is, as I said, a fire element. The traditional ruler of Leo is the sun, and it is also the esoteric ruler, usually considered to be veiling Neptune, the heart of the sun. Now, the goal of the soul in the fifth house is to develop a strong and self-empowered personality, one that's independent and intelligent. Sacral energy is poured into things like hobbies, sex, risky adventures, pleasures, children. As the personality transforms, the will energy is then going to be used to give birth to creative projects, which express the intention and love of the soul. Oops. Okay, strengths of Leo. generous, warm-hearted, creative, ability to lead or direct, integrity, self-awareness, confidence, self-assured, generous, dramatic, optimistic, proud, dignified, romantic. Some weaknesses: pompous and patronizing, bossy, intolerant. My husband tells me about that bossy one quite a lot. Misuse of power, overly competitive, vain, domineering, extravagant, arrogant, childish, conscious of status, overbearing, cruel, boastful, pretentious, and autocratic. The glyph itself can perhaps be seen as an emergence out of Cancer, out of the mass consciousness, to self-consciousness. It can also be a vein leading to the main coronary chamber, or even the mane of the lion, right? Leo can be all about me. Look at that little baby lion there and the proud parent lion there. The peacock, competitive in sports. And a couple of our presidents have a lot of Leo in them, as we'll see later on. The house where Leo rules, where Leo is on the cusp, you're going to be challenged to shine and take the lead. It's where you need to demonstrate courage and heart, and where you express your royalty, your individuality, and your method of self-expression, your basic approach to life. Okay, hold on one second here. Karen says, I did not know that Leo rules the spine. Could you say more about that? No, I'd have to dig out my medical astrology book to talk about it, but it is part of that, the spine and the heart and, that general region. Okay. Sorry about that. I don't have more details on it right now without pulling out the book. And we'll never make it through if we do that. Okay, so the sun is a non-sacred planet. Ray 2 is not will and power. I'll fix that later.
It's just that the sun is both Ray 1 and Ray 2. So hence...
Oh, yeah, and Leo is too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a starting point. How things orbit around you, being the sun of your universe and your method of expression. Believe it or not, it's a good way to learn by being the center of that universe. It's your basic approach to life. But then you can't stay the center. You have to recognize that there's other people out there, right? It's about vitality, identity, personality, equipment. The focus of expression of consciousness. The use of this energy in the sign in which it is found, the sun, constitutes the line of least resistance for a particular cycle. It's the focal point of the chart, especially exoterically. It represents the integrating center where the various facets of the personality flow into the unified whole. And esoterically, the sun veils Neptune, the heart of the sun. To the soul, the sun represents an opportunity to focus upon a particular kind of experience in a current incarnation. The exoteric level, the sun sign symbolizes the ego. It's the sense of self, the vitality and the energy used to express will, power and authority and how we shine in the world. It's related very much to Jupiter, the sacred Ratu planet, large-heartedness, generous, and abundance. So it's similar to Jupiter, the beneficence, the goodness, too much largesse because of the sun size and the fact that Jupiter is almost a sun. That's how big he is out there in our solar system. The esoteric ruler of Leo is the sun veiling Neptune. That's the present level of personality integration. It's the unfoldment of those soul qualities and responsiveness to, or lack thereof in some cases, the soul. It symbolizes the qualities the soul requires the personality to develop in the present incarnation through life experience so that wisdom results from that experience. A lot of us have, you know, Neptune in the signs is generational by nature. So a lot of us have Neptune in Cancer, Neptune in Leo. Neptune in Cancer, and of course it rules these two signs, doesn't it? Neptune in Cancer represents the cardinal and the water. Neptune broadens the scope of what family is, not just my family, but the family of man, humanity. Neptune rules the waters of life. One can step into those waters and know the divinity of all. It removes the boundaries and it creates a wide ring past not, providing greater environment for love to be expressed. And Neptune in Leo. Leo obliterates all other stars. Neptune recognizes and connects to all parts by seeing all is one. It recognizes all other hearts, suns, and the heart of the sun. You know, the sun itself, the physical sun, is just so bright that anything that comes close to it is hidden by that brightness. But that's also a veil, isn't it? And that's what this is talking about here. Ava?
I've unmuted myself. There we go. Hello, everybody. So the opposite to Leo, Leo representing the fifth house, its opposite, if you were to draw a line, takes you to the 11th house. And it's the house of Ray 5, because Aquarius displays the fifth ray. It's the only ray that the Tibetan has given us. But remember, we've all talked about in the past that we all have three dominant rays, personality, soul, and monad. So if he's given us three, then we have an idea of where we might be able to place one of the rays. But if he's only given us two, we have to jump around, which is the personality and which is the soul. But here he's only given us one. And with the one, we have to assume it's the personality of the particular sign that it's in. It's part of the fixed cross, so fixity plays an important part to both Leo and Aquarius. As you know by now, it's usually around the end of the third week that things change from one sign to the other. And in the northern hemisphere, it's associated with winter. In the southern hemisphere, it's the opposite, obviously. Exoterically, what does that particular house, the 11th house, represent? It represents friends and hopes and wishes, social values, groups and organizations, social reform and revolution. We'll get to why revolution because of its ruler shortly. Esoterically, how do we spin this up, you know, spiral it up, so that we understand that it's not just friends, it's now true spiritual brotherhood. It's coordinated group activities to achieve soul outcomes. We hear so often about people belonging to groups and to clubs, but usually it's very, very superficial because we don't really get to know necessarily the people that are part of this larger group. It also represents the new group of world servers in a way, because it is a group of esoteric bodies. Personality joins groups and organizations and makes friends with people who share the same ideals. The disciple automatically becomes a member of the new group of world servers by serving through a group which is inclusive and accepting of different races, creeds, political affiliations, and religions. I think we've talked about the new group of world servers when we talked about Taurus, because Taurus is the sign that kind of represents the new group of world servers, but there isn't really a need to sign an application to belong to this group. Anyone that is fairly evolved and wants to serve humanity and understands the importance of that is by that very nature, a member of the new group of world servers. Now, you will notice, or have you noticed, that all the air signs are not represented by symbols of animals like the rest of the zodiac is. So you have in Gemini, the twins. In Libra, you have the lady blinded holding the scales in one hand and the sword in the other hand. And here in Aquarius, you have the man holding the pitcher of water that he pours out to thirsty men. It's the waters of life. So the question to ask is, why do all these air signs have human beings? And the answer, from my perspective, is that air represents mind, and we as a humanity have to spiral ourselves up so that we are using our mind, moving out of the astrality and more into the mind. So the three signs that represent air or mind have human beings as part of their symbols. So in the little rectangle here on the left, you have that it rules the circulatory system, whereas Leo ruled the heart. One other thing to say about the house that Leo represents, the fifth house, it is sometimes called the house where the causal body would be, or the egoic lotus would be. And again, we ask ourselves, why? Why would that particular house represent the causal body? Or the soul, even the home of the soul. And again, it's my perspective on this. It's because Leo represents the heart. And it is the heart that expresses the soul that you are. So you have the heart in the fifth sign, or Leo, and you have the circulation through the entire system with Aquarius. And you can see by its glyph of the two wavy lines that it's a dualistic sign, duality. On the one hand, it represents air, as we have said, the air waves, and now we're moving into more air, right? All the Zoom and all the electronics that we're using, it's all through the air. It's the way the air moves. And yet, it's waters that is being poured out of the pitcher. And these waters of life do represent consciousness, yes, but Aquarius is also a very emotional sign. And so therefore you've got to balance these two, the mind and the emotions, all within the sign of Aquarius. One wouldn't think that emotions play such a strong role, but it does. Some of the other areas that it rules is the ankles, the calves, the shins, and of course the breath. So it's ruled exoterically by Uranus, while esoterically by Jupiter. Okay, I was going to try to move on to the next slide. I forgot I'm not in charge here of that. So we've talked about the fifth ray and the fact that it's fixed and the fact that it is an air sign, mind. Waves, liquid, yet an air sign. Pretty well covered that. The water, which is distributed are the waters of consciousness, understanding that all men are brothers. It's really like in water, how do you separate the various atoms of the water? You can't. Everything, every drop you drop into the water, all melds into one. We are all one. And we understand that we're all part of that oneness. The water is alive and pregnant with ideas that would be useful for humanity. And the glyph does not suggest a still pool, but rather depicts waves rippling over the water. That's another way to see it, is that the breath of the wind causes the waves to undulate and to move. It suggests locomotion. Now, the fifth ray is a disseminator of knowledge. The fifth ray is a resonant with the fifth plane, which is the plane, the mental plane, or the plane of the mind. So hence, it has to do with acquisition of knowledge. Makes for a good teacher. As a matter of fact, our school system has been laid out in a fifth ray style, which doesn't work for everyone, but basically that's the way schools and universities have been created. Aquarius governs the circulatory system, as we talked about, and these two glyphs are serpents of wisdom, or the two lines of the glyph are serpents of wisdom. Line above could be represented as the intuitional mind, which is philosophical, abstract, whereas the line below could be the rational mind. And together, it would represent the higher and the lower mind. Ideal. Okay. So some of the strengths and the weaknesses would be: Aquarius is friendly and outgoing. It's humanitarian, original and inventive, independent, intellectual, serving for the benefit of all, innovative, humane, progressive, tolerant, unique, scientific, logical, intellectual, right sharing and distribution, and freedom loving and altruistic. Now, it is, well, I'll go on to that in the next one. Weaknesses is, it can be contrary, unpredictable because of Uranus, unemotional, temperamental, bored by details, and too fixed in opinions, rebellious, excessive extroversion, cold and aloof, emotionally superficial and eccentric. And that's basically what I wanted to say here, the unemotional or emotional superficiality of this particular sign. It's like the old saying we've heard of Aquarius, that they love humanity, not necessarily the individuals, but they love humanity. So there is this kind of coolness to Aquarian people. Esoterically, Aquarius builds the community and develops group life and spirit. They want to champion humanitarian causes. They fight for causes to demonstrate fellowship and brotherhood. So we're repeating the theme again and again in different ways. The task of Aquarius is to wake up to the universality of spirit and the unity of all beings. Well, if Uranus is the ruler, which it is, Uranus is the awakener. It's the one that'll shake you up like lightning will strike a tree and really break it up and wake it up, right? That's what Aquarius does to us, to humanity. It wakes us up, brings in the new, brings in the future, brings in the ideal of the future, and is very innovative. And we'll see that when we do our distinctions and comparisons and the likes of each one of them. We will see how all of that works out. Next. So here we go, the idea of service. If any of you remember in the Labor of Hercules, it was the waters that were released to clean out the river. And that was the service that Hercules offered. He cleaned the stench and the dirt and the muck that was in the rivers by allowing more water to flow through it. So again, we see water associated with Aquarius. The house where Aquarius rules, and wherever it is in your chart, is where you will be challenged to be progressive and seek alternative methods, where you need to awaken or be awakened, where your group resides. So Uranus is the exoteric ruler. Now Uranus is a relatively new discovery. Prior to its discovery, it was Saturn that was the ruler of Aquarius. And many people still kind of use that. Like older astrologers will sometimes use Saturn. And Saturn is the decanant that we will be moving into. It'll be ruled by Saturn rather than by Uranus, which is what the Tibetan has offered us. So there's a real strong association with Saturn in Aquarius as well as with Uranus. So Uranus conveys the seventh ray. So it's an 84-year orbit, and so it's 7 years in each sign. Uranus is also the esoteric ruler of Libra. And that's another thing that's interesting. If you kind of get to know your astrology, is in the earlier signs, what ends up being an esoteric ruler in the later signs becomes an exoteric ruler. So it spirals up, and then a new one becomes an esoteric ruler. I'm not sure I'm explaining that very well, but it's very, very vivid for me in my consciousness. So Uranus is an esoteric ruler in Libra, whereas it's an exoteric ruler here in Aquarius. And in Libra, it shatters the tendencies to maintain the status quo, so needed for Libra, through the mind. It's like lightning power and new vision. Libras do not want to rock the boat. They like the status quo. And so if everything is supposed to be status quo, equal, balanced, then you have Uranus coming in and shattering all of that. And that's a needed thing for Librans. Whereas in Aquarius, being an exoteric ruler, which is also an air sign, it is revolutionary. It will bring in the new thoughts and the unusual and unique and radical ways of doing things. It begins in the mind, air, and precipitates into the life. It gives a sense of what is unique and suggests an independent existence. Placement, where you have Uranus, indicates the way one expresses one's uniqueness and how one might rebel against the established order. Because this is the planet of rebellion. It shows where we have to open things up and to experiment, where we can cut away old patterns and revolutionize our approach to life. So as we move then from the exoteric ruler to the esoteric ruler, being Jupiter. So the aspects between Jupiter and Uranus in your chart relate to a search for new horizons. If they are conjunct, you could be egalitarian, unorthodox, unrestrained. If you have harmonious aspects between the two, like a sextile or a trine or even a quintile, it could be that you are humanitarian, you might be liberal, or might be progressive. These are all generalities. I wouldn't, I wouldn't hang my hat on any of this necessarily. Inharmonious are crosses or quincunxes, and they could be deviant or injudicious or radical. And radical is not so bad, is it? It's just being rebellious and different. Okay.
Okay, guys.
We're going to look at the two. And BL is next.
Yes. And BL is having Uranus outside her window right now, and the squawk box going on with the weather warnings and everything. So it. Seems to fit very well. Okay, Leo and Aquarius, they're cultivating a sense of wholeness and a group purpose. You know, that's the important takeaway of this axis. You know, you got to understand yourself, but then you have to understand how you fit into that wholeness, into that groove. And it's creating new ways to transform that self-consciousness, that ego, me, 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 into group consciousness. Okay, we've mentioned it a couple of times, but Leo and Aquarius, they're both on the fixed cross. Here, as you can see, so is Sagittarius. It's part of that Ray 5. Sagittarius is not on the fixed cross. It's part of that Ray 5 triangle transmitting through Leo, Aquarius, and Sagittarius. Okay, so as we saw before, the fixed cross is steadfast, is determined exoterically. It involves soul development through crises and tests esoterically. With the fixed cross as a mode of operating, we saw that Taurus stabilizes accomplishment, Leo stabilizes action, Scorpio stabilizes feelings, and Aquarius stabilizes relationships. That's the fixed cross as a mode of operating. I want to point out here that we actually have two different contexts when we talk about the crosses. There's the mode of activity, something like bags of tools that we packed with us for this one isolated incarnation. It's a way of operating that predisposes us to being initiating if we have a lot of cardinal signs, stabilizing if we have a lot of fixed signs, or changeable if we have a lot of mutable signs. Okay, so that's one way of looking at it. But I also want you to remember that the three crosses can actually be seen in relation to the different levels of consciousness that span multiple lifetimes. The mutable cross is considered the cross of ordinary man. The fixed cross is considered the cross of the disciple. This means as we begin to awaken to soul impulse, we become increasingly responsive to the influence of the esoteric rulers, to the higher correspondence of the signs and the planets, to those esoteric keynotes. When we begin to face the many tests and trials that a disciple encounters as he deals with things in both the outer world as well as the inner world that's beginning to open up for him. DK tells us that we cannot determine from the natal chart what a person's placement along the path might be. An overabundance of fixed signs doesn't necessarily mean the person is a disciple, just as an overabundance of mutable signs doesn't mean a person has not yet stepped upon the path. We need to try and ascertain the person's level first. And then we can look to the chart and we can see how the energies might be playing out at either level. Because as a disciple, it doesn't negate the exoteric meanings. The person usually feels both. This is one of the things that makes it so difficult as the war between opposites is being waged. You know, DK refers to it as the wheel turning in upon itself. It's like the soul wants to go one way and the personality wants to go another until we've learned to integrate that, right? Okay, here's some things that we see in contrast with this axis: isolated unity versus unity in diversity. The kingdom or monarchy and aristocracy versus utopia, democracy, and meritocracy? The tyrant or the revolutionary? Individual consciousness, the one, self-service versus group consciousness, the many, and group service. The lover or the friend? Evolution or liberation? The heart or the entire circulatory system? One of the things that we like to look at is exoterically the kind of excessive action that we'll see with this axis. When Leo's desire to shine is ego-based, the negative side of Uranus can manifest through deviant behavior. Egocentricity, eccentricity often work together. The coming Aquarian age should favor democracy, but Leo dictatorships can hide behind the convoluted, corrupted facsimiles of democracy. The more they insist that the individual should surrender their prerogatives, the more they demand for themselves. Instead of Aquarian humanitarian ideals, science and resources are exploited to wage war and to dominate people. Eventually, the excesses of power-mad dictators provoke the revolutionary side of Aquarius, and in the uneasy balance between freedom and regimentation, a new equilibrium is established. As we see here, this is creativity versus thinking outside the box. Dynamic and unconventional creativity. Leo's power can operate subconsciously and hide a domineering attitude. The undeveloped Leo might fail to see or not care how oppressive he comes across to others. Instead, he can see outcry as an unappreciation for his efforts. Aquarians realize that self must be sacrificed for the sake of the group. They can appear impersonal, superficial, yet submerged ego may assert itself in subtle ways. Individuals become self-reliant before developing global consciousness, or their work is going to be just futile and ineffective. It's centralization and the individual versus decentralization and the group. Until the resolution can be found, until the common ground can be obtained. Aquarius reconstructs society with the ideal of equal rights and liberties for all. A real democracy of freely operating citizens, each illumined by the light of consciousness. They're not part of the masses that are easily manipulated by politicians. Leo and Aquarius must inspire statesmen who are concerned with broad principles, working for the group good. The Leo artist develops a universal outlook through intense concentration on the forms that he shapes, while the Aquarian scientist develops keen insight into the nature of objects and the formative laws of the universe. The liberty that men seek must be worn through the intuitive, won through the intuitive mind. Desire for freedom must come from the heart. Only when mind and heart come together can man achieve his full creative power. And on the higher spiral, Leo Aquarius is self-mastery, leading to that group awareness and that selfless world service. It's the King of Kings, the ashram of the King of Kings, the synthesis of being and the synthesis of diversity. For ordinary humanity, the individual seeks full expression and arrives finally at the point where he uses his environment for purely individual needs. He dominates his fellow men for personality objectives. The isolated individual becomes the group dictator. Esoterically, for disciples and initiates, the personality interests as an expression of the individual get submerged in the good of the whole. The selfish individual becomes the world server. Heights of noted service are then reached in both signs. I have this good example that I like to use of this particular relationship. You know, as a little ego, as a little personality, we're like a cell in the little finger. Okay. And then we find out, hey, we're a little cell in the little finger, and that's an entity on its own. It's a group, isn't it? And look what that little finger can do on as a group if we're all working together. Right? The little individual cell can't do that. And then you expand that even wider, and it's like, I'm not just a finger, I'm part of a hand. Again, look what that hand can do if it works together as a group. That individual cell in that little finger can't do anywhere near as much as the hand. And of course, you can take this all the way out, you know, the arm and the person. That's what we have to awaken to. We have to awaken to the fact that we are part of a group, and that as part of that group, we can't work in isolation. We can't work going our own different tangents for our own reasons. We must work for the greater good of the group itself. That's just the nature of it. Okay, Eva, over to you. We can't hear you.
Yeah, I know. I had to unmute myself. So here we are. In the evolutionary arc, the subhuman kingdoms have to learn a certain measure of consciousness that befits the kingdom that it's in, and eventually to sacrifice. So far, we have learned that the vegetable kingdom, the plant kingdom, has all three rays, which is personality, soul, and monad, fairly well developed. When we reach the human kingdom, we have to become individuals. So we've gone, believe it or not, from group, which is the subhuman kingdoms, to individuality. And that individuality is the Leo stage. Hey, look at me, I'm a person. And that leads to eventually self-realization or self-consciousness, which takes us way beyond the subhuman kingdoms, because we can look in the mirror and we can know, oh, that's me, I am that. Whereas a dog, for example, he will not walk through a door, but he doesn't know who he is, right? We have the capacity to know who we are. That is our individuality, our self-consciousness, which should lead eventually to self-realization. Its opposite, Aquarius, is now back to the group. It's group consciousness. So from the self-consciousness, now we move to the group consciousness. And many of you have been in groups and classes where there are still people who don't understand group consciousness, right? How they want all the attention on themselves. they take over, you know, their hand goes up all the time, or they're disruptive. They have not learned group consciousness. As teachers, we see this a lot. So it's a very interesting thing to observe. People that come to classes, those that have yet not learned group consciousness, and those that have. So in essence, these two signs are really like one sign. They are the signs that rule the coming Aquarian age. So this is an interesting thing that we're talking about Aquarius, because the new age is to be upon us. Now, I say is to be because there's so much controversy. There's some that feel that we've already stepped into the Aquarian age. The esoterists say it's going to happen around 2160, and it has something to do with the wobble of the earth. And so they look at, I guess, the axis and where it points to, the pointer, the North Star or Polaris. But in any event, there is a lot of talk about when it's officially going to start. But we know that there's always an overlap. We'll talk a lot more about the Piscean age next time we give our webinars, because we'll be talking about Pisces, which we're leaving behind, and now moving into the Aquarian age, which is more about mind, more about thinking, and leaving a lot of the angst of the emotions behind us. So what our notes here say is how these two signs are really one has also to do with the relationship between the individual and then the group, and it must be adjusted. Both are great signs of intellect. Remember, Leo is ruled by Ray 5, Aquarius is ruled by Ray 5, and Ray 5 is the scientific spirit. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be science, but it's laid out in a scientific way, a method requiring proof, those kinds of approaches to learning and to the way the mind works. They are great signs of vitality and of solar prana, because Leo is ruled by the sun and Aquarius animates the etheric body. So the circulation not only is of the blood, but the circulation is also of the ethers within the system. Leo distributes also Ray 1. So I would suggest that Ray 5 would be the personality, Ray 1 might be the soul. Aquarius does not. Yet Aquarius is just as much associated with the powerful Great Bear. So it has a Ray 1 association as well. Okay, we move on. Of the air signs, Aquarius is the most associated with the first aspect of divinity, which would be Ray 1. Adding great willfulness to Aquarius, as in Leo, it's ruled by Uranus, which, as we know, is the seventh ray, but Uranus is also first ray. It's also strongly electric, like electric fire. And Uranus, the planet Uranus, is so tilted that its head center, or its the top of the planet, faces the sun. So you can imagine the amount of power and the amount of energy it receives directly into its head center, which for us would be like the North Pole. That, can you imagine the North Pole facing the sun? So again, we see how the first ray would work through Aquarius as well. So as does the moon, which veils Vulcan in the hierarchical ruler. We don't always talk about the hierarchical ruler, but we know that it's the moon for Aquarius. And what does the moon veil? The moon can veil Vulcan, or it can veil Uranus. So it's a matter of choosing which of the two works better for where the person is on the path. The fifth ray learns to master energy, because Leo and the sun are a source of energies of our solar system. It's a great reservoir of vitality. Aquarius, with its fifth ray rulership, has always been considered the sign where multiple new energies are disclosed for new applications by humanity. So again, it talks about the newness of Aquarius. Aquarius will lead us into the future through invention, through the new ideas that will emerge, because it has to do with the mind. New ideas that will emerge that will then be implemented in such a way that they are meant there to help humanity. The scientific task is to discover unsuspected energy sources and to reveal them to all of us. Okay. Okay, I guess you moved on and I didn't notice that, sorry. Leo is commonly associated with solar fire and the first aspect, as we've just discussed. Given its first and fifth ray rulerships and its ultimate rulership by Uranus, hierarchically considered. So we had Vulcan as a possibility, and we can have Uranus as a possibility, because the moon is the hierarchical ruler and it veils Vulcan or Uranus. This associates both Leo and Aquarius with Uranus, the major sign of electrical phenomena and electric fire. Electric fire is the fire of will. So both these signs are blended together in what might be called the spiritual electrification of man. The sun and Leo very much represent the seed of spirit, which is for humanity the home of electrical fire. Aquarius represents the distribution of that electricity to all areas of this multifaceted aura. So we're moving more into an electrical age, and yet, you know, when I talked about the web and using electricity to get our messages across, especially now that we're homebound, we need it even more. We had a blackout here last week that lasted about 6 hours. I can't begin to tell you how we all missed all the electronics that we have now gotten so accustomed to. Everything. We went to sleep by candlelight just to see how to wash up and you know, go to bed. But electricity is such an important part of our whole way of living that we take it for granted. That's how we're moving into the Aquarian age. So whatever we're doing now, there's going to be more of it. Okay, let's move on. So there you go. Electrical fire, electrical phenomena, spirit, electrification of man. So the spectrum is here too. You know, you saw the spectrum, the red on the one side and the purple way, way down on the other side. So you see the entire spectrum of the color band, infrared and ultraviolet.
You know, for those of you who know how Eva and I work, you know, I'm the more, let me fill you with facts, you know, kind of, and Eva is the one, God's sake, Beale, get a picture or two. But I understand when I see pictures like this, isn't this just a very evocative picture? Mm-hmm. And it fully describes what we're trying to say here. So thank you, Eva, for finding this lovely picture.
Okay, we'll move along. Everybody's taking that in?
We actually have a question here.
Okay.
Joe says, with all the emphasis on ray 1 and 5, what is the role of ray 2 and other softer rays? How does it fit in the future?
Okay, that is the role of brotherhood. That is the role of understanding that we are all one. Otherwise, it would be very, very cerebral. The whole thing would be so cerebral that we wouldn't have heart. So this is a combination of heart and mind. So I think it's the best of both worlds as we're moving into the Aquarian age. There are many, many groups now that are understanding brotherhood, and it's used colloquially a lot. Do they really understand the oneness of all of us? Maybe now with COVID and understanding how the globe is all, we're all together in this and we're all one, and irrespective of skin, nationality, religion, we're all one. You know, our hearts beat the same for every one of us. Our blood runs red for every one of us. So that hopefully will help humanity know better the idea of brotherhood. Hope that's answered your question. Here we go with more cooperation. They're both involved in the great problem of the one and the many. There we go. It's exactly what I was trying to say. Unity and variety. The only true wisdom is to realize that the one is the many and that the many are the one. In the new Aquarian age, we'll see grand display of this multiplicity. I mean, the Aquarian age is going to help us see etherically, help us realize that etherically we're all connected. We're all part of the great etheric web that is our planet. And we are a little point within that larger web. You may have seen pictures of the globe and it shows little triangles and how all these triangles are linked together. And that is trying to show us the interconnectedness of the web that could be understood as the etheric and how each and every one of us is a little point within this larger, larger web. And the web represents the web, the electrical web that we are all so involved with these days. Life is simple now by comparison, for under the influence of Aquarius, the many, many dimensions of human living and even the planetary living will be revealed. So we will see etherically, we will try to understand brotherhood, we will try to move in a much more Aquarian way. I mean, we've heard these words, we're moving into the Aquarian age. How many people actually stop and think, what does that really mean? I was part of a larger group that met every year. It was a group I used to teach in Colorado. And there were three of us that were teachers. And the group evolved way after we finished teaching to become a leaderless group, a leaderless group. So the group offers all kinds of new thoughts, new innovations without a leader. And that is the new Aquarian motto, to be a leaderless group and yet to be able to function together in cooperation and in unity. So the essential sense of selfhood, the sense of unification will also grow strong. Boy, I'm saying this before I'm even reading this. I'm sorry, I didn't even look at this as these thoughts come through my head, but this is underscoring what I've just said. Because of the sense of identity at all levels, not only will we have the group, but powerful individuals at the center of groups, inspiring and vitalizing the groups. See, not everybody in the group is going to have this inspiration. Not everybody in the group is going to be able to offer innovative new thoughts, but the group will have this ability to hold it together, to hold it together, to inspire those that can and those that have the potential to inspire and uplift and share with the rest of the group. There won't be a competitiveness like there is so much now. There's this large, which is very Leonian, right? There's this competitiveness. Look at me and I'm better and I'm this and I'm that. Whereas in the Aquarian, it's more group conscious. It's more the whole, the all. With the absolute unity at the heart of it. That's what it is. So Neptune is also powerful here as the esoteric ruler of Leo. And when would we look at this? We would look at this as if you have a Leo sun or Leo rising, you would look to see what is the esoteric ruler. And we know it's the sun. And so here we would substitute Neptune for that. And you'd look to see where Neptune is in your chart. And a hierarchical ruler of Aquarius, which is veiled by the moon. So the hierarchical ruler, as we have said, could be Uranus, it could be Vulcan. Essentially, these are signs with great heart. And one would never think of that with Aquarius, because Aquarius is so cool, like temperature cool. You know, we talked about unemotional, cool, very, very Aquarian that way. And yet, Jupiter is the esoteric ruler. So a fairly advanced Aquarian can be heart, can be Jupiter. Love and will can be beautifully blended here, so that Jupiter, which is associated with both Sun and Jupiter, the Ray 2 planets, have a position here. And Jupiter being the esoteric ruler of Aquarius. So you have Neptune, you have Jupiter, both of them have a lot to do with love. They both are second ray, even though Neptune's personality is sixth ray, its soul is second ray. If the first initiation is taken largely under the sign Leo, which rules the opening of the heart center, it is the Aquarian group that can stimulate people to take this initiation. Interesting that we're talking here initiation, because we are told that initiation in the future will be taken as a group. It will not be individually like it was in the Piscean age. It'll all be done as a group. Is this most amazing scientific age to come? It is the heart of humanity, which needs to be stimulated if this is going to happen. Aquarius is the sign of service, related to the world server pouring forth energy for the benefit of all. Yet, both these signs are great expressions of extroversion, outgoingness, and service. That's a good point. They're not introverted signs. They're extroverted, outgoing, radiating out. Okay. So in summary, Leo is about the self, self-assertion, the ego, the individuality, sensitivity that leads to individual awareness. We really didn't talk about the sensitivity of Leo. And I have a grandson who is a double Leo, Leo sun as well as a Leo rising. And you would, and he's got first-rate personality. I mean, he's got all those rays there. You would never think of sensitivity when I look at him, because he takes charge, he's the leader of every group, he excels in school, and yet the kid is so sensitive. So there's a real sensitivity. And I remember reading this in esoteric astrology, the sensitivity of Leo. And maybe it's a good thing, because sensitivity allows us then to be sensitive to others, not just to be only about ourselves. So I think sensitivity is an evolving quality, not to the point that you have to hide because you're so emotional and sensitive that way. But I'm thinking more in terms of sensitivity to the environment, sensitivity to people and people's needs. And that sensitivity should eventually learning all about who we really are, if we have the ability to self-reflect, to become introspective. Aquarius is the will to serve. First of all, in the beginning, it serves the ego, the lower self. Eventually, it'll serve the higher self, which of course is the group, the soul, humanity. World service, that's what it becomes. Individual consciousness becomes transmuted into group consciousness. So Leo is self-mastery in preparation for selfless service. And Aquarius stimulates group awareness, world service. You know, with the sun ruling Leo, I often use this example, and I think it's very fitting here. So the solar system has the sun in the middle of the system. So it is centralized. It's like, here I am, I'm the sun, and you all are revolving around me. Hey, look at me. I am the center. I am the boss here. That would be the ego, lower self, Leo. Then later on, as the Leo matures spiritually, the heart, which is ruled by the, which Leo rules, the heart, then becomes radiating like the sun, so that the sun nurtures and nourishes all the planets, right? It is the one that supports the life of all that circles around it. All that orbits around it is nourished by this central sun. And then, of course, the spirit is what keeps everything alive. Everything is in motion and doing what it's supposed to do, because the spirit, the central spiritual sun, is the life of everything that it nurtures and supports. So the axis is one of building that self-mastery specifically for the purpose of our usefulness in the group and in the world of service. So in these signs, and this is, I just read this recently in the book, in Esoteric Astrology, and here he covers quite a few signs. There's Cancer, there's Leo, Sagittarius. So you have here the three crosses, the cardinal, you have the fixed, and you have the mutable. Then you go to Capricorn, again, cardinal, Aquarius fixed, and Pisces mutable. So you have all these three axes or three modes of the crosses covered here. You have the six signs, which constitute the six-pointed star of the human or fourth creative hierarchy, which we are. Cancer and Pisces marking the two extremes. The crab symbolizes imprisonment, the hard shell, and the rock under which the crab ever takes shelter. And the fish signifies freedom. When that loop that loops the two fishes together is finally shattered by its sole ruler of Pluto, then the fish can be free. The soul can be free to go one way and the personality in the other direction. So that's a very highly evolved fish here. In between Leo, Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius come the four stages of personality development, the struggle with the pairs of opposites, and finally release into full spiritual service. So Leo is right in the beginning of these four. Aquarius is at the end of it. And in between you have Sagittarius and Capricorn. And I think it would be worthwhile actually thinking about all of this, thinking how does that actually work out? What are the stages of the personality development that he might be referring to here? Leo, which is individual consciousness, I know, and Aquarius, which is group consciousness, I go forth. So we come back to just summing up everything we've learned so far. With Leo, we see the rays, 1 and 5. It is fixed fire. It is ruled by the sun, which are rays 1 and 2. And esoterically as well as exoterically. And in Aquarius, you have ray 5, which is fixed, and it's also in the same cross, the fixed cross. They have to be, they're on an axis. And it's an air sign. Its ruler exoterically is Uranus, ray 7, and esoterically, ray 2. And in Leo, and you've all heard that, I am that. And this one says, and that I am, but I learned it, I am that, and that am I. So whatever works for you, you can say. Whereas in Aquarius, as waters of life am I, poured forth for thirsty men. So the Tibetan always talks about the light. The light is in every sign. He gives us how to see the light, how to see the light as it relates to the sign. In Leo, it's the light of the soul, a reflected point of light, logoic or divine. The light diffused in Cancer focuses and reveals eventually a point. So when you start your glyph for Leo, you start it at the point, right? The point is like the heart. And then you loop it up and back down again, like the tail of the lion. So you start with the point and then you loop it up and back down. In Aquarius, the light that shines on Earth across the sea. It's like the wind on the waves of the water. This is the light which ever shines within the dark, and cleansing with its healing rays that which must be purified until the dark has gone. Now that is very, very occult. So what is the dark? And then it purifies until the dark is gone. Again, it relates so much to the labor of Hercules and what Hercules did with Aquarius and the river and how he cleaned it out. So reminds me of that labor. Okay, we move on. And here we go with two Leonians. So this is what Donald Trump says. I am the only one who can make America truly great again. And this is what Obama says. There's not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is a United States of America. So you see the approach, how different it is. Both of them are Leo suns. Both of them represent the Leonian self-identity. And you will see how Obama uses the Aquarian motto as well in recognizing the that it's for all of humanity. So we see in Obama, which is the chart on the left, you see Aquarius rising, right? He's got Aquarius rising, and opposite his Aquarius rising is his Leo sun. So he has this axis. I'm an individual, and yet I understand the group, and I understand my nation, and I understand humanity. And he is showing the magnanimous Leonian heart and the idea of the group, the nation, the whole. You go down to Donald. Donald has, I'm sorry, he wasn't a Leo sun. He was a Leo rising. I made a mistake there. So he is Leo rising. So he should be, if anything, I shouldn't use the word should, if anything, Leo rising needs to, one needs to step into the higher qualities of Leo in order for the sole purpose to have an effect. Now he's got Mars there right on his ascendant. Mars, as you know, is astrality. It's your solar plexus, and it's what drives Mars, drives him, and it's all about me, ego. It's still the lower Leonian qualities that we see coming out. And then just another little piece here. He's got a Gemini sun, right? And it's in the 10th house. And you see the polarity that this man creates in everything that he does. Divisiveness and polarity. Again, we're seeing the lower aspects of Gemini at work here. I'm a Canadian. I'm not involved with American politics, but you know, it's on the news all the time. I get to see it all. So I'm giving you my unasked for thoughts on these two guys, these two presidents, and how obvious it is. Not only that, in the Trump chart, you've got the sun right opposite his moon, Sagittarius moon. So his emotions in every level are so, his sense of security, which the moon is, and his Mars, which is the solar plexus, are so much part of who he is. He can't help himself. It's there in his chart. I mean, sure, he can rise to the higher aspects, but, you know, I don't want to say too much. I'm holding myself back, guys. I don't want to say too much.
I just want to point out a couple of things here. First off, everything that you just said about the sun and the moon opposing each other is, of course, true of the personality level. But this also means he was born at a full moon, right? And what is it DK tells us about the full moon? That's a time of special connection where humanity can reach the hierarchy. Apparently he was sleeping through that part. Oh no, I'm sorry. We're not supposed to have. The other thing that I would like to point out is what we see with Donald Trump is that he is a personality, you know, in your face personality, of world stature. And remember, that is actually a fairly elevated state of consciousness, because he's already integrated those lower vehicles into that personality. Has he taken it to the higher level where it's selfless service of the soul? No. But I just want to point out that someone this powerful of a personality, that is in its way a step upon the higher evolution.
Right.
It needs work, but I just wanted to point that out. Okay.
Yeah, and he's got Jupiter, since we're talking about his chart, he's got Jupiter trining his sun there. So with that trine, and also Uranus is being trined, so he'll do things that are different, that are out of the box, and that's what people love about him, that he does things differently. And with Jupiter, it just makes it more of, it expands it, it makes it, you know, more of that. And as BL is saying, he is really demonstrating that the Leonian stage of being an individual, and that's what exactly how he's living his life, as a individual who has attained the Leo stage. Do you remember, for those of you who were alive in the 80s, it was the me generation. It was all about me. I remember buying a poster that said, "It's all about me." And I had it in my granddaughter's room. Oh no, I had it in my child's room, and it was more for children, but it's all about me. Look at me. And the me generation, eventually, you know, we grew out of that and we moved on to better, hopefully better things. But it was that Leonian stage that was being emphasized. And it's a very necessary stage. I can't emphasize that enough, that stage of having developed a unique and integrated personality where all three vehicles are functioning together and you can stand out in the world. It's an important part. Maybe we don't emphasize it enough.
Okay, Eva, we've got a couple of questions here. One of them, Anne Veronica said she didn't hear what I said about being born at the full moon. She's got a bad internet connection. Okay, I just want to reiterate. You see here in his chart that his sun is conjunct the earth and it's opposite the moon, which means he was born at a full moon. And the point that I was trying to make is that DK tells us that the full moon is a special time of alignment. It's an alignment between the sun, the earth, and the moon. And it's just like you and I meditating and getting an alignment. Okay, so that's what this is. This is an alignment of those three things. And at that time, DK tells us that humanity has greater access to the hierarchy during the full moons, which is why we celebrate the full moons every month and do the solar fire meditations. Okay, so I hope that answers that question. And then Laura says, I was wondering if it would be possible for you to explain a little bit about the idea of the moon veiling a planet, what that means. I guess it's a difficult concept to explain or grasp.
Right. Now, we know that the sun and the moon are really not planets. They represent certain energies and certain qualities, but they're really not planets. So what the Tibetan has taught us is where you have the sun and where you have the moon, you really need to substitute the planets that we use, that he offers us, that we can use. So for the moon, he says you start with Vulcan and then you go to Neptune, depending on the point of the path and depending on what you feel resonates for you. And so the only time you would really look at that is if the moon is one of the rulers of one of your luminaries. So if it's the sun, that is, let's say you have a Virgo sun, its esoteric ruler is the moon, then you would look to see which of these two planets that I've just mentioned really has an effect on me. For Aquarius, it's the hierarchical ruler. I think for Taurus, it's also the hierarchical ruler, it's the hierarchical ruler. And again, you would look to see which of these two planets really works for me. If those are your luminaries, if they are in any of these signs. It's the same thing with the sun. You normally don't substitute the planet unless it's your ascendant or your Leo is your sun sign. Like for BL, Leo is her sun sign. So she definitely has to look at the sun itself, because on a personality level, we are told that it might be Jupiter that you would look at, but on a soul level, it's definitely Neptune that you would look at. And again, if you had Leo as an ascendant, you would look at that as well. You would look at Neptune. So all we do is substitute one or the other. Hierarchically, for the sun, it would be Neptune, and then Uranus are the two that he suggests we look at. And for the moon, it would be Vulcan and Neptune. Maybe even Uranus on an initiative, a very high level. Hope I've covered that. And BL, please jump in if you'd like to add to that.
No, I think you did cover it. Thank you. It is, like you said, Laura, it is kind of a difficult concept. And it doesn't help any when we say, well, it could be this, or it could be this, or it could be. But in reality, that's the nature of esoteric astrology. It can be many different things at many different times, depending on and who's using the energy and how they're using that energy. So, mm-hmm. Okay, we have someone asked about copies. I think she meant the slides, and of course they're in the handouts. You guys can download them right now from your handouts, but I will put them with the recordings. Let me see. Vijay says, even Aquarius having Ray 1, why some of them not able to focus on their soul path and have lack of willpower sometime and leading to lower nature easily? How to get rid of this challenge? Well, that's the challenge, isn't it? You know, we have to develop that individual self first and our individual will before we can understand the true nature of it and branch out to the greater responsibility of the spiritual will and the group will. It's all just a matter of baby steps and learning it from the ground up. And one of the best teachers is ourself. So
now Aquarius does not really convey the first ray. Maybe it does, but we haven't been given that. We've only been given ray 5. But we know its association with the first aspect, the will aspect. So it can draw upon that will energy, not necessarily by its rays. But as I said, it can definitely draw upon that because it resonates with the first aspect of deity, which is the will. I'm sorry, that just rang. Okay, so any other questions?
No, apparently our time's up. Yes.
Do I have another slide after this?
I'm sorry. I think this was the last slide. Yeah. No, there's still plenty of questions. I'm sorry. let me see. Jan says, wasn't Donald born close to an eclipse too? Yes. I'd have to go into solar fire to look at it, all the details, and I'm sorry, I just don't have the time to do that right now. But you can tell that because the nodes are there conjunct, the sun and the moon. So right. Yes, he was born during an eclipse. You could tell, I mean, you could go in and you could look and you could figure out what the details are. And there's, you know, a lot of different interpretations of what that mean. But usually it's something significant going on, and or the parents dropped them on their head. No, I'm sorry, that's personal again. All right, Yvonne, lower Neptune for Leo for Trump. Well, I don't think of it as lower Neptune. I think of it as just the sun being the sun, the personality, the physical sun. I really think of Neptune more as that esoteric approach and opening the heart of the sun. For him, let me look at his. I'd have to do math, and I'm sorry, my head isn't into it right now, to see what the aspect might be between his sun at 22 and his Neptune at 5.
I would look more likely as the personality ruler of the sun, which tends to be Jupiter. So if anything, I would look at Jupiter for him. And Jupiter is, it's trining his Uranus, and it's also trining his sun. So right. It gives him a lot of me, a lot of personality, a lot of in-your-face personality. I don't know if the man has yet developed the heart, you know, the opening of the heart. Yes, he's a Leo. I mean, his hair, his mane, and all that is very Leonian, and he is in the center of everything. But has he really developed the higher level of the Leo's, you know, ascendant, which is the heart? Any other questions there?
Looking. Sorry, I was muted. I was talking, but muted. Jan says, both charts have Uranus close to the North Node. What would the similar quality from that? It's hard to say. Uranus is always going to be something unexpected. It's going to be a new direction for this lifetime, but I can't really think of something right now that other than the fact that it brought both of them unexpectedly to the presidency. I mean, Barack Obama came from completely out of nowhere, and I think Trump was a laughing matter when he first said he was going to apply or run for the presidency, and then he laughed him all the way into the office. So,
what I can add to this is that for Obama, Uranus is the exoteric ruler of his ascendant, and that is conjoined with the North Node. Now, the North Node, we tend to say, is your destiny. That's where you're moving towards. So in many ways, he has the potential to really move in an Aquarian way, being that Uranus is its ruler, in his destiny. And it's all in the house of relationships. So he knows how to handle relationships. Even, I'm sure, with his wife, he might do things in an unusual way where each one needs their freedom, because Uranus is all about freedom. So I see that working really well for him. But for Donald, it's up in the 10th house, and it's in Gemini, and it's in an air sign, which in many ways, there are so many different ways of looking at Uranus and Gemini. It could be a genius. I mean, it could be genius. That's the highest level it could be. But it's definitely the higher octave of Mercury, which is the ruler of Gemini. Uranus is the higher octave. So it can be quite a smart mind, quite a brilliant mind. being that it is in Gemini. And many of us get to see that because it's in the 10th house. It's the house of his profession, his career, and the way we see him. So we can see, you know, I'm sure a lot of people think he's quite bright and quite brilliant. And he demonstrates that in many areas.
Suzanne says Uranus conveys the seventh ray, and that can be used for good or ill. Absolutely. Every single sign, every single planet can be used for good or ill. It's just the way we, based on our consciousness, are actually using it. Are we using it at the lower level, or are we using it at the higher level? Suzanne also says, aside from the idea of Donald and the possibility of the degree of evolution, you know, because he is a strong personality, it would be interesting to study charts for signs of the Black Lodge and the way that that's operating. Yeah, I agree, and we have a couple of examples of that. But it's, I don't know, I'm the sunny Leo here, the Pollyanna, who prefers not to go down that path.
I agree with you. I wouldn't want to spend my energies energizing a chart of the Black Lodge. It's enough the hierarchy has to deal with them. Maybe at that level, they understand certain things. I wouldn't want to wake things up, you know. If you delve into the blackness, the darkness, you end up attracting it in some fashion. And that's not something that we want to engage in. I'm speaking we, meaning people that are quite esoteric. We don't really want to play around with that.
Yeah, basically, I'm a fraidy cat. I don't know about you.
I don't want to mess around with it. I had an experience with a student who I am sure was, he was in that area, and it was really horrible to watch what he was doing to other students in our class. So, yeah, I wouldn't mess around with that.
And then Nisa says, Cancer, Capricorn, not on any cusp, the esoteric significance. Well, yes, that's true in Donald Trump's chart. He has Cancer and Capricorn intercepted in his 11th and his 5th houses. Okay, so in the 11th house, that's the house of group activity, right? And Venus is in that house, Saturn is in that house. Mercury is in that house. So they're in Cancer and they're intercepted, which means he has to work to unlock the energy of that. Okay. Barack Obama has something intercepted as well.
And while you,
Aries, he's Libra. Aries Libra.
Yeah. It's interesting that Cancer is intercepted, and the birth of the United States is a Cancer sun. So he has not yet, we don't know if he has unlocked it, but that's a very interesting thing to think about, that it's the very thing that he needs to be compassionate towards is the larger, you know, the country, the nation, the people, and that's kind of locked up for him, if you know what I mean. I'm glad somebody brought that up, because I hadn't thought about that.
See, Barack Obama, he had Aries and Libra intercepted, but he had no planets in them. So the expression of those would be inhibited. He had his part of fortune, but, you know, he had no real planets in these. So he didn't have that. What's the term that I want? The obstacle to overcome, like Donald Trump has with his stellium here in Cancer, his ring pass knot, Saturn, his communication, Mercury, his way of relating, Venus, all there in the 11th house of the group house. So,
and both Mercury and Venus are the rulers of a sun sign. And they're locked up. Just counting it out. I'm not adding anything to it.
Right. Okay, I think that's all the questions that I see. As usual, we will have this posted to Makara shortly, and I will post the slides for those of you who haven't been able to download them from the handout section. I have the ones in there for next time, too.
Does everybody know where the handout section is? It's at the very bottom of this, what do you call this?
The panel, the dashboard.
Yeah, very bottom.
And I think our next time is going to be the 8th of August. So we hope to see you here for our Virgo Pisces webinar, the 8th of August. Same bat time, same bat channel, as they used to say on the TV show. Okay, and like I said, we have one in August, and then we'll have one in September that just kind of brings it all together and wraps up the series. So thank you very much for participating with us.
Thank you, guys. So we leave.
So we leave.
Webinar.
Goodbye, everybody.